All right, the case of Cornelius versus the Commonwealth.
Your Honor, thank you, sir. I heard the court reference a separate case and stepped out for a moment. I'm sorry.
Well, no, that's understandable because we had to drop that case down because counsel was not present yet, and so we've accelerated the opportunity to hear from you.
Thank you, Your Honor. We are grateful to be here.
So we're pleased for you to be here. Do you care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Your Honor, we would reserve 3 minutes.
Minutes, yes, sir. And we're ready when you are.
Your Honor, thank you. And I apologize for blowing up points. It is my nature, I think. But I want to make the first point, Your Honors, and we are grateful to be before you today, that the law of this case and the traditional and longstanding law of the Commonwealth of Virginia is reflected in the case of Conkling v. Commonwealth, 45 Virginia Appeal 518, 2005, that stands for the proposition that both the legislative intent clear and the holdings of the Commonwealth of Virginia with respect to the goals of juvenile justice in Virginia are corrective in nature rather than penal. Are rehabilitative rather than punishing.
But it's still a matter of discretion for the court.
Your Honor, we submit that this is not a context of discretion, but like the Martinez case and other cases we cite in our brief, that this is a matter of de novo review because it's a matter of a remarkable. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Let's talk about that for just
okay.
A second. If you're looking at the actual statute that governs this, it seems that the language of the statute indicates that there's the word may that's used. And may clearly seems to indicate that there's some degree of discretion or permissibility as opposed to shall. I know we have members of the court that say shall means shall unless it doesn't. But may clearly is something that's discretionary. So given how the statute reads, how can we accept your premise that it's to be reviewed under a de novo rather than an abuse of discretion? What's your best argument for that?
Well, Judge Malvo, let me say first that no matter what the standard, the Commonwealth's brief at 15, we believe states accurately that a decision on which no reasonable jurist could agree is a violation of law because it is an abuse of discretion.
Well that's a separate matter. Let's just get to the base element.
Okay.
Are we looking at it de novo based on my question, or is it abuse of discretion?
We believe it is de novo because it deals with the administration and interpretation of the statute itself, 285.2.
How is it not just the application of the statute as opposed to the interpretation of the statute? Because that seems to be what we have.
The part C that Your Honor is referencing, that references the shall with respect to the report, which we suggest to Your Honor and submit to Your Honor, is in and of itself sufficient.
Well, that's the part you're saying is
to prove the rehabilitation.
Because it was contrary to law.
We think that the consideration of that evidence, which is inclusive of much of the rehabilitation and the remarkable evidence of rehabilitation for this remarkable young man, is in fact consistent all in the report. But we do believe, Your Honor, that with respect to understanding and interpreting the statutory structure that begins at 272 and provides for the blended sentence capacity for the serious offender, and then moves to 285.1 and 285.2. And when we get to the evidence, there is a, within the bounds of what this court indicated, it considered. As you know, and to a certain extent, some of this we submit is moot, because the court indicated it had considered all the evidence. But like the Allen v. Steffen case, review of this record belies that conclusion, quote unquote. In this case, Your Honor, we've got to start with the base. The base, the legislative intent, the law of the Commonwealth is...
We only get to legislative intent if the statute's ambiguous. How is the statute ambiguous? It seems like you're arguing different things. You're arguing that it's de novo, and then you're arguing that it's ambiguous, because if it's not ambiguous, we don't need to look what the intent was. I get that's a policy argument, but from a legal perspective, help me out as to why that would be something that we would consider.
So with respect, Your Honor, to, for example, the application with regard to the statute itself and its interpretation, how the court was to consider this evidence, the effect of this record is to show unequivocally that the court singled out one statutory consideration, that is the static statutory consideration of the nature of the offense, and that is all the court considered.
But the statute says that the court can or may consider the nature of the offense, whether a weapon was used, and things of that nature. And I get the fact that this is an order that doesn't really lend much light to what weight or what the court considered, but it seems to be that the court can consider, it has to consider what's in the report, but can also balance it about the facts.
But not, we submit, Your Honor, not to the exclusion of all of this record evidence the court admitted with respect to rehabilitation.
But for us to agree with you, we'd have to find, wouldn't we, that the trial court, in fact, did not take into consideration all the evidence when the court waited for 2 weeks because of the tremendous amount of written materials. The court said that it considered all of the evidence, the Oritanis evidence and the exhibits. We would have to disregard all of that, wouldn't we, in order to rule in your favor?
Well, Judge Huff, we believe that an examination of this record, that this record is examples, it gives the court a clear evidence of unimpeached rehabilitation across the board. If the court looks at the evidence that came in.
Can I stop you right there? Even if we could accept that, the circuit court was sitting as the fact finder on this particular case. There was a lot of evidence with respect to the rehabilitation and how far this young man has come. But if the fact finder decided that the rehabilitation was not enough at this point, wouldn't that be in the discretion of the fact finder and not of this court?
We submit, Your Honor, that it would not be. It is not within the court's discretion to elevate one portion of the statute to the exclusion of everything else. The court's consideration of the content of the report is filled with rehabilitative evidence.
Well, what if the court didn't elevate it? What if the court essentially weighed and balanced the factors? And because rehabilitation is such an important factor based on the court's determination, and the court was free to reject the positive evidence that went towards rehabilitation when the testimony was essentially a claim of innocence, right?
If this were a general sentencing, in a general discretionary environment, then maybe the court's view would apply. Respectfully, we believe such is not the case. You know, the blended sentence that was the sentence at sentencing in 2019 was specifically inclusive of the serious offender, and the blended sentence that, in fact, allows for and directs statutorily that these reviews occur. In that context, the disregard of evidence, and that's all that this record can show, an unequivocal disregard of all of that evidence of rehabilitation is an error of law, because that's the only reason for the hearings to take place. In this setting, if a juvenile is sentenced to the Department of Corrections and then to adult time, and there's no blended sentence that activates the release and review hearings under 285.1, then there is no, that's simply a sentence that is served. But this court ordered 285.1 to occur. These are release and review hearings, and to, as a matter of law.
Well, they're not just release and review or review and release. There's the option of retaining, correct?
It is evaluating.
Yes. Characterizing it that way, but that's
yes.
Not all that's said.
Well, it is, and Your Honor, I didn't mean to mischaracterize it.
I'm just clarifying.
No, and I appreciate that. It is the element of the evaluation of continued commitment or not that is part and parcel of this, but in this setting, in this law, that 16.1227 shall be liberally construed for remediation, for rehabilitation, in a setting where a 14-year-old boy, when this happens, is in a setting where his brain clearly, the law that has been accepted by the United States Supreme Court, Supreme Court of Virginia, this Court of Appeals, where that child's brain and executive function has not developed for all the reasons that was testimony here, the ignoring of the evidence of remarkable respect for authority, work in school, work on behalf of other inmates, helping the counselors, student government, executive editor of the newspaper, elected mayor, tutoring others, all of the evidence, no violence, no risk of harm to himself, no risk of harm to others. I was going to show you this, but it stands for the proposition that every category that this child had was, in fact, the lowest risk possible in the report that the court shall, whatever shall and may, but shall consider. And we believe when the court examines all of this foundational construct of Virginia juvenile justice law and then looks at the blended sentence, and the purpose of the blended sentence can be for no other reason than to assess the rehabilitation of the child. There is no other reason for this purpose to disregard the evidence of rehabilitation, which again we believe this record clearly demonstrates is an error of law.
Even if the court agrees with you, and this is the part that I'm trying to get to, even if the court agrees with you, right, that is the purpose, right? This court had a hearing, and the court, as a fact finder, made a determination that the rehabilitation portion, acceptance of responsibility, had not yet to be achieved. And so further punitive actions, incarceration at this point, would be transferred to DOC at this point because he had been in DJJ. That was necessary to achieve that goal, not only for the rehabilitation of the juvenile, but also the other objective of protecting the community at large. And so what we're trying to do, even if everything we're saying is right, if the court went through the mechanics of having the proceeding, had the hearing, you were allowed to put in the evidence, and the court was allowed to evaluate and accept or reject that evidence, where does that leave us today?
In two places we submit. One is, and if we go to Your Honor's question and go to that side of the court's discretion, this result on this record is plainly wrong. There is no impeaching evidence of the rehabilitation of this young man in this record.
Is our court allowed to reverse a trial judge or certain court judge because we disagree with the ultimate ruling of the court?
We would submit, Your Honor, that when Your Honor's review of the record evidence in the case does not support in any way with regard to the rehabilitation that must be considered under this statute that we allege is a violation of law de novo, not to do so. But even within a discretionary environment, the question is not to try to figure out what His Honor did in the circuit court, because he never helped us understand that. He set forth consideration of all the evidence, consideration of the statute, and then issued this ruling in a way that when the court reviews this record, and the record, as the court knows, included representatives of the Department of Juvenile Justice who were untouched with respect to their very clear recommendation for release on parole. The Director of Secondary Education, the Director of Student Government, the Director, the Behavioral Health Counselor herself, two experts.
You're in your rebuttal time, just so you're aware.
I don't want to stay in the rebuttal time.
Okay.
But I do... Our prayerful request, and then I'll be quiet and come back, and I'll maybe have a minute left. But is that a review, it's not trying to figure it out. The judge did not give us that opportunity. It is looking at the record and seeing that no reasonable jurist could reach this conclusion if he's considering the evidence of rehabilitation, which we believe under a blended sentence under 285.1, 272, 285.1, 285.2, the court must do as a matter of law. And failure to do so, we allege, is a violation of law. And the failure to do so, we believe, is reviewed de novo.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Dyson?
Good morning. May it please the court, Virginia Tyson for the Commonwealth. We should not lose sight of the fact that in September of 2017, the defendant's grandmother was sitting at her sewing machine in the defendant's home, and he shot her with a bolt-action rifle, and she died from a gunshot wound to the back of her head. He pled guilty to second-degree murder. Additional charges were null prost, and he received a blended sentence. The sentence was 20 years with 10 suspended. At the time of this hearing, he had been in DJJ for 3 years and 8 months. The court retained jurisdiction to have these review hearings, and we are here today before this appellate court on a review of what happened at the third one of these review hearings. The issue before this court is whether the trial court abused its discretion in selecting one of the options.
Let's talk about, we asked questions of Mr. Lichtenstein about the standard of review, and
yes,
clearly there seems to be
a disagreement.
He postures that it is de novo. Obviously, you're indicating that it is abuse of discretion. What's your argument to support the standard of review?
The standard of review for a sentencing decision is abuse of discretion. There can be an intersection between abuse of discretion and de novo when statutory construction is involved. But even in the Martinez case, which both sides actually cited, the reason there was some sort of de novo review is because the court had relied on the wrong statute. So there can be, when you rely on the wrong statute, when you make an error of law, well, then that itself is an abuse of discretion.
I think that's what Mr. Lichtenstein is falling back to. If we don't agree with his de novo standard, then in terms of the abuse of discretion, because of the way the statute is postured, and that it indicates there's the shall, whatever shall means, in reference to the reviewing of the report, and that part is ministerial, and that the court failed to do so, that no reasonable jurist would have done what the court did.
Your Honor,
I do think
that the report is part of the evidence. And yes, the report does include a great deal of positive information. The court also includes, this is on 24 and 25 and 26, includes the facts of the crime, includes that the law enforcement officers determined it was very unlikely this was an accident because of the precision of the shot from 40 yards through the window to hit the grandmother in the back of the head. This report includes the bizarre messages that he left in the bathroom before he fled to Richmond to try to catch a plane to Moscow from the airport. That's in this report as well. And I think that the prosecutor made the point in closing argument in this case about the lack of acceptance of responsibility. And the statute provides not just that the court can consider the positive evidence of the people who come in and testify on his behalf. And in fact, this hearing was all about the defendant. It was all about how well he had done. Sure, that was important for the court to consider. I think it's important, we mentioned it in our brief, the therapist at Bon Air said she had recommended two others who had been convicted of murder in her 3.5 years be released. The fellow that...
Relevant or supporting of your position, I understand it might be from a trial perspective, but how is it from an appellate perspective something we need to look at?
I'm sorry, how does what, you need to look at what?
The fact that she recommended two others.
Your Honor, my point being that the hearing was all about the defendant. And there is something more. There is the crime. And it's interesting, Mr. Lichtenstein wanted to quote from 16.1.227, which has the purpose and intent of the juvenile statutes. And number 4 in 16.1-227 includes to protect the community against those acts of its citizens, both juvenile and adults, which are harmful to others and reduce the incidence of delinquent behavior and hold offenders accountable for their behavior. This is a murder prosecution. There was a guilty plea to second-degree murder.
Was there a guilty plea or was there an Alford plea?
Your Honor, an Alford plea is a guilty plea. It's not a no-contest plea. It is a plea of guilty that says, as Your Honor is aware, that we recognize the evidence is sufficient, and while not admitting factual guilt, we are pleading guilty. It is a guilty plea for purposes of habeas jurisdiction and a whole bunch of other things as far as...
Very well, sure. But I ask that question because it appears that the court for the rehabilitation that the appellant is arguing that the court should have credited to their client, that the court was taking issue with the fact that this young man at this stage of the proceedings was not accepting responsibility. And I ask that question because if he pled Alford, although the appreciable effect of Alford is a guilty plea, but he pled Alford, then how are we supposed to reconcile the rehabilitation part of this and the Alford plea? So for example, in this case, if the court is rejecting his statements and testimony about what happened, how are we supposed to reconcile that? Is the court supposed to hold that still against this young man after all this time?
Your Honor, I think that as opposed to holding it against the defendant, this is one of the things that the court can consider in making its determination. This defendant could have been sentenced to serve all of his time as an adult under the statutes. And I must say, this is like federal discovery. You can't find the answer in one statute. You've got to go to like 3 or 4 different statutes in order to find it. But when you look at this, the serious juvenile offender and the violent juvenile offense and 272A1, the bottom line is there were options for his sentence. And critically, now that we are in review, there are options for what happens after the review. And in fact, interestingly enough, under 285.2E, the first one of your options is the juvenile begins serving any adult sentence in whole or in part. Now, the court can consider under C other sources the court deems relevant. And as I pointed out a moment ago, even the report itself has very damaging information in it about this crime. And at the point of this hearing, the defendant is over 19 years of age. He's only been in Department of Juvenile Justice for 3-plus years. And the court not only took almost 2 weeks while this was under advisement, to review what had happened and the huge amount of evidence. I believe he said a lot of written material the court wanted to review. In the court's correspondence and the order, the court explicitly said that the court was reviewing this material. And to say that the court ignored it is to say that the court was not being truthful in its order. And I don't think that's fair.
If I can interrupt, I think the appellant's argument is not that the court ignored it. The court, when you look at the record in its whole, the entire record, that the judgment of the court was incorrect as a matter of law, as they're trying to argue, because the court did not take into consideration the factors that the court should consider, particularly the rehabilitation piece. And there was overwhelming evidence, according to the appellant's argument, with respect to that.
I think in their briefing, they argued a number of times that the court was ignoring this evidence. In fact, I believe they even used the word myopically in their brief. And so I believe they have argued that. And the court had the ability and the discretion to consider all of these factors, and the court did. Reasonable jurists can differ. That's the Supreme Court's holding in Due. On the same facts, reasonable jurists can come out with different responses. And I also would note, and this is in response to their reply brief, that the court didn't give any of its reasons. A couple of cases, in which I did provide on the other day to defense counsel, that absent a statutory requirement that a court give its reasons, it's not required to do so. The ones we rely on are Bowman, which is 290 Virginia 492, 500 at note 8, and Brown from this court, 75 Virginia App 156 at 168. And so the court has taken the evidence, has listened to the argument, has taken this matter under advisement so that it can review everything. And the court then had options. The options under 16.1, 285.2e. And it made a choice among those options. The court did not make an error of law. And under Lawler, when a court has a range of choices before it and chooses one of those options and does not make a mistake of law, then it is not reversible error. And I will point out that Lawler is absolutely good law on this point, contrary to a suggestion in the reply brief from the federal habeas and the death penalty. Lawler versus Zook had to do with excluding expert testimony about future dangerousness, and it really has nothing to do with the use that we use of Lawler, and this court and the Supreme Court have used of Lawler. And so when all is reviewed, including the very statute that the defense has brought to this court's attention today, that the juvenile system is different. It absolutely is. An adult sentence could not be reviewed year in and year out as this one is. But when that review occurs, the court has options of what the court can do. And this court had before it these options. And it had before it not only the positive information about the rehabilitation, but the facts about the crime and what happened after the crime. The consciousness of guilt, of suggesting someone else had committed this crime by writing notes of, the boy goes with me, I'm sorry, and running off to the airport and suggesting that he was going to leave the country. These were legitimate factors in determining how best shall this entire sentence, this blended sentence, be served. And part of that sentence had been served in the Department of Juvenile Justice, and the trial court, not in an abuse of discretion, but in exercise carefully of that discretion, determined that at this point it was time for the remainder of that sentence to be served in the Department of Corrections. And because the court did not abuse its discretion, did not make a mistake of law, considered the factors which were appropriate for that court to consider, we would urge this court to affirm the judgment of the circuit court in this case. And I'm happy to answer any additional questions the court may have.
Seeing none, we thank you.
Thank you.
Lichtenstein, I think you have a minute left.
Thank you, Your Honor. The question of law in this case is whether the court had to consider the unequivocal and overwhelming evidence of rehabilitation in this case. Every argument that is made, with all due respect to our friends at the Commonwealth, at the Attorney General, have to do with the nature of the offense. There's no question that's in the statute. But to have a record, which the strength of which as a matter of law is unequivocal with respect to the evidence of rehabilitation, remarkable, which I could review in more time, but the court knows, no evidence of violence, no evidence of psychopathy, psychopathology before the offense, after the offense, 4 years almost of remarkable performance, remarkable rehabilitation. We have a statutory structure that requires the acknowledgement of that. When the court doesn't give us direction, We have to go with the record. We have to judge the record to see if it was interpreted correctly, that the rehabilitative evidence was received and was considered. We've argued under Stephen v. Allen, Allen v. Stephen, rather, Fourth Circuit case, that
isn't
conclusion.
That a habeas case, though, isn't that slightly? Isn't that not to interrupt you, but that's a habeas case.
It is, Your Honor, but it stands for the proposition that the claim of review of a record that is unequivocal in its nature is belied by the record. We are simply saying the statutory requirement here, the only reason for the blended sentence opportunity is to monitor and check the rehabilitation of the child, of the juvenile offender. And it's not simply, well, he's got the option to send him to DOC. All of the cases cited, the only ones who go to DOC are the ones who fail, who have felony offenses, not the ones who are model in the report, model residents, helping everyone else, breaking up fights, not being in fights. All of this remarkable evidence that the court heard. We allege that what we believe is a disregard of that rehabilitation evidence is an error of law, is a wrongful interpretation of the manner in which the statute must be interpreted, and that evidence is involved. We also believe it's an abuse of discretion on this record. We thank the court for your help.
Thank you. We'll step down and greet counsel.